Track 7, London Landmarks. If you, like me, listen regularly to BBC Radio 3, you will often heard them mention Wigmore Hall. I've walked past the front door, and I was surprised at how inconspicuous it was. Now, Lord Low of Dalston is going to take us behind the front doors and the box office.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner.
My name is Colin Lowe, Lord Lowe of Dalston, an independent crossbench peer. I'm standing in Wigmore Street in London's West End. When I was asked to choose my favourite London building, I immediately thought of the Wigmore Hall. I'm a great concert goer, and for the last 30 years, I've made my way here sometimes as often as once a week to enjoy the music it offers. I'm blind, and this is a space I can easily navigate myself around. In some ways, I know it better than my own home. The Wigmore Hall is nothing like London's other major concert halls. It's small and intimate, nestling unobtrusively at the back of this tall Edwardian building, not much more than a stone's throw from Oxford Circus. If it wasn't for its iron and glass porch, projecting about a metre out onto the pavement, you would scarcely know it was there. Let's go in. Once through the dark wood double doors at the back of the porch, you find yourself in a broad passage carpeted in deep red and lined with dark panelled wood. As we move down the corridor, we can hear the traffic noise recede with every step. Now we've reached the reception area, which is filled with natural light from a large semicircular window high up on the left. It's just a few steps now to the box office on your left, its quaint wood-framed facade reminiscent of a cashier's post in a Victorian shop, and then onto the programme table straight ahead, made of dark wood panelling. The doors to the hall lie beyond, and just to their right is a long leather sofa where you can sit and anticipate the pleasure to come. I've become part of a small coterie of frequent attenders, and may well find an acquaintance or two to chat to while I wait. Then the doors are opened, and the hall itself lies before us. It's not much bigger than a ballroom, really, perhaps 20 metres long and 15 wide, with its 400-plus seats arranged in rows facing the stage at the far end and a balcony at the back with a few dozen more seats on it. Unusually, the seats here are not in tiers, but all on the same level, which gives the hall an almost domestic feel. The Wigmore Hall was built in 1901 by the Bechstein Piano Company, which had a showroom next door and wanted to show off its pianos in a concert setting. During World War I, the firm was forced to sell up because of its German origins, but the hall has continued ever since, essentially unchanged, and retains an atmosphere of Edwardian elegance. It's built in the Renaissance style, with marble and alabaster walls. Flat pillars of rich brown marble punctuate the walls every few metres, interspersed with cream-painted panels, each of which supports a set of wall lights on a decorative brass base. The pillars rise about 8 metres to a broad marble frieze surmounted by a decorative pelmet. The frieze is discreetly picked out with gold, and the cream panels below also have a band of gold within them, like a narrow picture frame. Above the pelmet, the cream roof curves over the hall in a barrel shape. At its summit, a small raised glass section floods the hall with natural light, which is softened by bands of frosted glass. The stage is at the far end from the entrance to the hall, raised up about a metre above the auditorium. The performance area is bell-shaped, with the back wall curving away from us in a semicircle. The stage itself is quite small, about 4 metres at its deepest point, and 8 metres wide. A piano and 3 string players fill the space as they would a drawing room, and the domestic feel is heightened by 2 large flower arrangements on pedestals which stand in the hall just to the left and right of the stage. The curved back wall of the stage is decorated with a frieze which runs round the wall at a height of about 8 metres from the floor. Above the frieze, the ceiling curves over the stage in a dome shape. This dome is visible to the audience seated in the auditorium because the proscenium arch is about 4 meters higher than the frieze. So what lies in front of us is a cross-section of a dome curving up to join the proscenium arch. This part of the roof is known as the cupola. It's decorated with a remarkable mural in arts and crafts style, portraying music as the fruit of divine inspiration. In the centre, a naked man gazes upwards at a ball of fire, whose vivid golden rays spread out in all directions. He is the soul of music, and the fire is the genius of harmony. The other figures in the mural are separated from the soul of music by a tangled web of grey thorns, which curves round the rays and across the central figure and represents the difficulties in the composer's path. At the bottom of the picture, on the left, a musician in black robes plays with his back to us, gazing up at the ball of fire. His instrument is hidden by his robes, but from his attitude, it could be a viol or violin. To his left stands a naked girl with long flowing tendrils of red hair. She is love, and she holds a large bunch of white roses. On the right of the picture, facing us, a black-clad composer sits scribbling furiously, hunched over a long strip of manuscript paper which flows over his knees. Standing to his right, gazing down at him, is another young girl. She is Psyche, the human soul inspiring the composer to write. In the front wall on either side of the stage, the mural continues in a broad band of colour. Two singers in flowing dark robes stand on each side, singing the music which flows from the composer's pen. The white manuscript curls in front of them. Since the earliest days of the Wigmore Hall, a stream of famous players from Arthur Schnabel to Andras Schiff have made their way onto this stage, drawn by the celebrated acoustic which has made the hall famous. Once the musicians strike up, the sound reaches the audience with extraordinary immediacy. It's almost as if there are no acoustics in the building to colour the sound, which has instead made its way direct from the instrument to your ear. The management tell us that acoustics experts have found no reason for this, and in fact they say it breaks the rules. I believe a shoebox shape is thought to be the best acoustically, and the auditorium conforms to that idea, but the semicircular stage and the lack of a rake in the hall must have an influence. Whatever the reason, the hall is blessed with an unrivalled sound quality for the chamber music it offers, and this, together with its modest size, makes for an experience that is both intimate and inspiring.
Thank you, Lord Lowe.